You are listening to Normalized Crime, an in-depth look at gang life and all the effects that come along with it.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Normalized Crime. I'm Eric.
What's going on? Berto here.
And Berto, what do you got for a topic for us this week?
This week, man, I was thinking maybe we should visit an area that's kind of, I guess it's a little bit somber, but it's a reality in this lifestyle. And that's kind of talking about people who get hurt from gangs and gang violence and violence in general, indirectly. I think it's important because, you know, as somebody that lived in the life and lived in the street, it's easy to overlook that. It's easy to kind of forget about everybody else except yourself. A lot of times, man, there are people, especially family members, who get hurt and get affected. You know, they're innocent. They have nothing to do with anything, any of the decisions you made. And yet they still get the more harm than you get. You know, like, you know, for instance, there's a lot of guys I know who've never gotten shot. But, you know, I know some guys who their family members have been shot. So I think that's where I'll go. I got a few stories and maybe you can chime in when you feel like it's something you need to address or a question you have.
Well, and I already have a question to kick this right off with, because we've talked about the code of like the Latin Kings. Is there something in the code of the Latin Kings that says nobody outside of the gang world, I guess, should ever be harmed? Or is there some sort of rule along those lines?
I mean, that's a good question. I think it's, you know, what's the old saying? There's casualties in war, right? I mean, so there's never really a hard line drawn about people outside of gangs being hurt, because, you know, you can never really tell when things are going to happen. You can never predict. And then to kind of piggyback on that note, like, if you're trying to play that card, you know, how many times will you run into a guy that might have tried to kill you last week and he's with a quote unquote innocent person, and now you got to scale back because, you know, you can't break this rule. So I don't think that there's a hard stance on it. I think I've mentioned it in the past. There's a lot of guys and a lot of gang members that they don't try to shoot at people or any of that when kids are around or women are around, or, you know, and guys don't target police officers. And yeah, these are things that generally people live by, but that doesn't make it the rule. You know, that's kind of more the exception, because, you know, just going into like what I'm about to tell you right now about like different stories and different instances, when people get hurt, man, and people that you love get hurt, it's hard to regulate the decisions that other people make based on the fact of who the rival might be around, or who, you know, it's almost impossible. And then it's almost wrong. You know, let's just say some guy's, you know, family member gets shot. Who am I to say you can't shoot that guy because he's with his family member, you know, because he's not a gang member. So it's really touch and go, man. I think that really just comes down to the individual with themselves and how much they can deal with it within their own conscience.
So with the gang members that you were around, do you think most of the people that say were in your gang or in your what we call that, like the chapter of it or whatever, right, were they kind of conscientious of this? Like they were, because I know like in a previous story, I think it might have even been in the last episode, you were talking about where there was, you were going to take a gun somewhere and there was two girls with you, and you tried to kind of take, not really start anything with the girls there. The idea was to get the girls away from there and then go back and deal with the situation that was brought up.
Right.
Without the girls there. So was that pretty a normal thing among everybody within the gang where they were trying to keep innocents out of harm's way?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That was the norm across, I would say, every member that I associated with. You know, I do think that, unfortunately, the sad truth is that in this world, man, there are people that are just evil. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm not putting myself on a horse because I've done bad things, and And I'm sure a lot of people might look at me like I'm evil for the things that I've done. But true evil, man, I'm talking about people that have no conscience, people that have no heart. They don't care if there's kids and women around. You know, those do exist. You know, those people do exist. And unfortunately, some of those guys are in gangs, and even more unfortunate, some of them are Latin Kings. That's just the reality of people. I don't think that's the reality of any gang. Yeah, I'd say for the most part, almost every Latin King I've ever met has a heart and wasn't targeting women and children. And 100% sure everybody that I associated with day in, day out was definitely not targeting women and children. And so, I mean, that's I believe that's a fact.
But there's always going to be, you know, I mean, we've talked about it, the Jeffrey Dahmer type person. I mean, they're going to end up in a gang at some point in time. And
that's the sad part, man, is that, you know, that's the brush that everybody's painted with, you know, because that's what gets the most publicity is those kind of guys. You know, it's rare that, you know, there gets light shed on the guys that got out of prison or maybe even never went to prison but changed their life and are doing good things in the world. You're going to hear about the rotten gang member, you know, opposed to that.
Unfortunately, that's just the way our society is. That's the much more attractive thing to talk about than the person that fixed themselves. So
For sure.
All right, so what are some of these stories that you have for...
All right, so I'll start with a big one first, right? And the biggest one, it means a lot to me. So, you know, when I was 13 and I ran away and I started to, you know, quote unquote, live in the street, I guess, you know, I didn't have a lot of places to go. I was staying friends I knew, friends here, friends there. And like I said, I started off as a wild walker. And when I ended up becoming 19th Street, I actually ended up, I guess, I don't want to say re-hanging out with a guy, but it was a guy that I knew throughout my childhood because his family was like deep into sports. And when I was growing up, I was deep into sports and we were never really on the same teams. He was older than me. He was like in my brother's kind of league. But, you know, we knew of each other and we knew like the South Side is really small. And so I knew of him. So my brother hung out with him at this time because my brother was going to be 19th Street. And I ended up starting hanging out with the guy. His name's Chico. You know, we hit it off. And, you know, the first thing he told me when he found out that I was basically homeless because I chose the streets, you know, opposed to being with my mother and my father, he told me, listen, man, you can come live with me. My mom will let you come stay with us. And he said, but, you know, there's probably going to be some caveats. And basically what he meant is his mom, you know, she would still want me to go to school. She would still want me to, you know, to be active in sports and not just be a drunk gang member partying all the time, which is what I ended up doing. Right. But so it was really cool, man. I ended up living there. You got to remember at this time I'm on the run from my own family, right? Not on the run in the sense that, you know, on the run is the term meaning that I wasn't going home. And so, yeah, they were looking for me, but it's like a needle in a haystack. You know, where do you find? They got, you know, they put out runaway, whatever with the police. But anyways, so I ended up staying there. And, you know, I think I told a story before when criminals get lucky about his older brother when the cops came in and they never found the 44. Well, that was the house. That was the house that I was staying at. True to form, man, his mom, you know, she wanted me to go to school. She wanted me to play on the sports teams because she knew I was really, really deep in sports. And she was always like really, really active with like, you know, youth sports and baseball and basketball and, you know, just a really, really kind-hearted lady. And so I held up my end of the bargain for a little bit of the time. And but ultimately, I ended up being 19th Street. Bellone ended up living in the basement, which is his older brother. And, you know, the Kings were always over there. We were always in the basement. And so the house wasn't like a gang house, but, you know, a lot of guys hung out there. And, you know, we had certain rules that we followed when it came to being at families' houses. And we never hung out on the front porch. Those are one of the things. We never gangbanged, you know, in the neighborhood where you know, like a family member lived. Like that was one of the things we tried to avoid, people knowing really where we were at, specifically for the purpose of this story, is exactly why we did those things. And so, unfortunately, those things that you take caution in don't always stop bad from happening. Chico also had a family member who lived upstairs. It was his cousin, and his second cousins. And one of them was a female around our age, closer to his age, closer to Chico's age. And, you know, she talked to guys. She was at a phase in her life where she was talking to, you know, different guys, partying, doing her own thing. You know, women, for the most part, girls, they're naive, unless they're like really, really dedicated to one gang, right? They're naive to the gang ideals. You know, they don't care if they're hanging out with a Latin King one day and a MLD the next day or whatever it is. And so they don't care. And
see, that's really interesting to me. I would assume that most of the girls would kind of choose a gang to be around, but that wasn't common at all.
No, well, some do. Don't get me wrong. Some do, and they swear by it. But a lot of them don't. You know, a lot of them, they want to party. They want to hang out. You know, and you got to remember, this is my era, right? So, you know, this is common. Like girls, they want to hang out with different guys and be around different guys, and same with you know, guys, they want to be around different girls. So yeah, it was no surprise. The main thing that we always, you know, emphasized to her was, listen, don't let guys know that we're over here, you know, and whatever it is, right? So now you got to remember, right? This story, I'm basing what happened on a theory. Now there's not 100% certainty in what happened being blamed on this group that I'm about to blame it on, right? It's not 100% certainty. It's a theory that we came up with that makes the most sense.
Gotcha.
So with that being said, she ended up starting to like one of the guys who was an East Side mafioso, right? Which is, it's not even a South Side gang, obviously, in the name. They're from the East Side, right? But they war with Latin Kings. They, you know, historically war with Latin Kings, which is weird because we're not even in the same neighborhood. But and throughout my whole career, this was the only instance that I can remember having an issue with them. But that being said, she ended up like being like a boyfriend girlfriend kind of deal with this guy. And with any relationship as a teenager, you know, and you know, this guy's a gang member, she's a party girl, you know, you get into arguments, you get into fights. And so when that happened, she inadvertently, no, I guess advertently, put us kind of in between of it. Like, you know who my cousins are, kind of thing, you know, and then he's a gang member. So he's like, well, I don't really care. Like, you know, kind of like disrespectful. And so she's kind of like, okay, well, if you come through, like, you're going to see. Right. And this is a conversation that was known to us after the fact. Like, this isn't like something that we're in real time knowing about the argument, knowing about what's being said. None of us are privy to this conversation. This is her and him. Mm-hmm. And we knew about this after the fact, right? So that happened, right? So fast forward to this evening that I'm speaking of, right? You know, we're out. I remember being out. I think I was, I want to say it was like me, Fro, Bellone, a couple other guys. And we were out, and we were actually in Cudahy. And we were at some girl's house, right? Just hanging out. Just another normal, typical summer night, hanging out, drinking, smoking. Nothing particularly, you know, pointed about that evening, right? And I remember we were in the car and we're smoking. And a car speeds up behind us and stops really fast, right? And we knew right away it was, I could tell by looking back right away that it was GOAT, right? He gets out the car, headlights still on, he runs up to the car, right? Now, listen. In gang life, in this lifestyle, right, there's a few things that you never want to hear. You just never want to hear them. And, you know, obviously one of them is this person got killed, this person got shot, you know, just or something happened, this person got jumped. The sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach is like, it almost makes you like nauseous, like how fast you can go from, we were literally just smoking, to something that devastating happened, and it's something similar happened when Black Cat died, right? And so I remember the feeling I got when Goat came up to the car and he said, "Yo, mom got shot," right? He busts the door open. He goes, "Mom got shot." And right. And now everybody calls her mom. And that's why I preface the story with how genuine of a good woman she was and how genuine everybody loved her, just widely known, not just amongst our gang, but just like the community centers and, you know, people knew who she was. She was that kind of woman. And so I remember that feeling, man, when he was like, "Yo, mom got shot." Like the whole atmosphere changed. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm just in shock at the story. Keep going.
Yeah. So, you know, naturally we're like, what? Like, you know, your emotions are running high. You're immediately like, what? You know, and he's like, "She's in the hospital." So we all jump in his car. We jumped out the car, you know, and this is the girl's car of the house we were at. She was inside, you know. It was just literally, I think it was me, Fro, and Pelon in the car. And maybe this guy Weddle, I'm not sure. But we literally left the doors open, like just flew out the car and jumped in the Goat's car, and we're flying to the hospital, man. We're in Cudahy and we're going to St. Francis. And I remember Goat doing like 95 miles an hour, like through stop signs, like just trying to get there. And I remember in my head, just like thoughts racing, man, like, you know, like almost like, you know, tears going down my eye, man, just thinking about her, devastated that something like this would happen to her, you know, of all people, the nicest lady, man, like, you know, nothing to do with anything. And you know, and not knowing her status, not knowing what was going to happen to her, not knowing if she was going to make it. You know, we get to the hospital and she was in the emergency room. Thankfully, she wasn't in the ICU. What ended up happening was whoever it was, our speculation was that it was the mafioso guy coming to shoot to send a signal to us, the Latin Kings, that he wasn't scared of us, regardless of what Chico's cousin said. What he did was he pulled up in the alley and he shot through the back door. Right. And the way this house is set up, it was a duplex. So Chico lived downstairs and his cousin stayed upstairs. And there's literally like a back door, like a small mini. I mean, I guess you wouldn't call it like a vestibule, where there's like stairs that go upstairs and stairs that go downstairs to the basement. And then just straight through the door is the lower apartment of the duplex. And the crazy part is the back door is literally like this thick, like metal door. I mean, like loud when it closed and it was open. And had that door been closed, you know, the bullet probably doesn't make it through.
Oh, but, man.
So, right. So it goes through, you know, this flimsy, apartment door, I guess is what it is, the bottom duplex. And it actually hits our dog. It goes through our dog, Tonka, and like ricochets off his bone and then hits Chico's mom in the chest. And it hit her like in the side of the breast. And so the bullet was actually still in there. Tonka actually saved her life, because without the slowing of the bullet, even if it didn't hit her in the chest, I mean, something like that hits you in the leg and hits one of your main arteries, you know, who knows, you can bleed out. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's where she was at. She was shot in the chest. And I remember Tonka actually died, man, from that wound, which was another devastating fact, right? I mean, he's innocent, you know, we love the dog too, you know, mm-hmm. So yeah, man, I remember going into the emergency, you know, room. This wasn't too long after she had came to the emergency room to pick me up from when I got shot. And so I remember, you know, looking at her, man, and like, you know, I had tears welled up in my eyes, man, just seeing her like that, like vulnerable and in pain. Like, you don't like to see somebody that, like, you don't, like, it's one thing to have pain inflicted on yourself, and, you know, but to see somebody so innocent, you know, not knowing anything about anything that's going on, to be in that much pain for something that she had nothing to do with. There was something about that not only, you know, brought tears to my eyes, but also lit a fire inside of me, man. And I remember she just, you know, I grabbed her hand and she was just like, the first thing she said to me, she was like, "This ends here." you know, and she was like, she was on a breathing machine. I just remember looking at her and I was kind of like shaking my head. Yeah, you know, because I knew that's what she wanted to hear. But in my heart, in my head, there was no way. There was no way that I was ever going to not try to avenge that moment, you know. And she was saying it to everybody there, and everybody was saying the same thing. And literally after that, man, you know, there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of shootings. Nobody was killed from the result of that, but there were a lot of people shot at, you know, probably some people hit, and all hands were on deck at that point. You know, I feel like even the Kings who didn't really know Chico's mom were definitely, you know, there to support and there to try to avenge that. And so even, you know, some people that weren't Kings, you know, that just loved her that much, you know, that respected her that much. And so, yeah, man, that was just one of those times that you really can't, I guess you can't quantify how much of a milestone moment it should have been for guys to really see, like, listen, man, what we're doing,
yeah,
is affecting everybody around us and the most important people around us, right? I mean, like, you know, just imagine that, man. Like, you know, just hearing that statement, right? Like, your mom is shot, right? Or, you know, like, I remember my brother, he always tells me this. He remembers when he got the call that I got shot, right? And, you know, it's lighthearted now, but he remembers picking up the phone and they're saying, yo, Berto got shot. And then, like, his heart dropped, the same feeling. Your legs get weak. And then they're like, in the foot, right? So that like, yeah, that lightens it up, right? But the initial statement, the initial shock of it is something that I could never really truly explain that feeling. And so, I don't know, I guess, you know, the moral of that is that we didn't learn from that. And and somebody who never deserved any of that kind of pain, you know, suffered in that moment.
So how, after this all happened, and I forget her name, but we'll just call her Mom, got mm-hmm. out of the hospital. Was that kind of the end of you guys being at that house and stuff? Was she kind of like, no, I don't want any of this crap around me anymore?
Or right. So this is kind of everything coming full circle. If you remember to the conversation about how criminals get lucky, it was that we were moving out and that the house was actually empty. And that was right after this had happened. And, you know, she was moving out. And she was kind of like, I'm done with this. And the next house that we lived in, there was a lot less guys coming over. And then the house after that house was even fewer guys. And so, yeah, to answer your question, right after that happened, yeah, she started packing up her stuff when she was healthy and able to. And, you know, that's when the process started of, you know, I guess slowly stopping the Kings from coming to her house. And ultimately, to be honest with you, man, I think it slowly started to progress, even Chico and Pelon moving away from being Latin Kings, especially Pelon.
They kind of started pulling away from the whole life after that happened?
Yeah, I mean, slowly, you know, Pelon before Chico and then Chico eventually. But, you know, It was that house was significant in gang activity. And I became a King in that basement. You know, my brother became a King in that basement. You know, a lot of the members, Black Cat, became a King in that basement. Like, you know, that was a iconic place. You know, it was kind of where I went from being just a little shorty on Wild Walker to being Latin King Berto from 19th Street. And so that house, you know, will always be synonymous with where I started at. And yeah, and down the line, the next house we ended up living on was 18th and Grant. And yeah, there was a lot, you know, she didn't welcome the guys over there like that anymore. And then the next house they lived on was down a block on 18th and Grant, you know, right by our neighborhood. And then really nobody was welcome over there. But every now and then we would still go over there and hang out, you know, with Bellone. And that's eventually when Pelon ended up getting X'd, was at that house. But yeah, so I think it pushed them down the line, man. And I think they started to see that it was a lot more serious than they originally thought it was. You know, it's one thing to be Latin Kings and to get into street fights and everybody walks home with a couple bruises and scrapes and black eyes, and you talk about it and laugh about it and get drunk and party. It's another thing when bullets are flying, man, and people's lives are at risk. It changes people, and it sort of solidifies who's in it for the long run and who's not.
And you got to imagine that had to have been because, you know, they had accepted their fate, you know, like this was their lifestyle and they were willing to have whatever happened to them happen. But then to see it happen to their mother, right, it's just kind of like, okay, now I just made a decision that's bringing my mother into this lifestyle, which is not what I intended to do at all. Not what I signed up for. So I could see how that would push them away from it, you know?
Right. Right. And, you know, to be fair, right, I think, like, for me, it's okay. So, like, with me, man, when I started and decided to be in the street, I was all the way in the street, 100%. And that was for two reasons. One was because at the time, I was not wanting to be at home. I wanted to rebel and I didn't want rules. And the other was that I didn't want to have the gang life around my family, around my personal family. And for, you know, reasons like this, I didn't want anybody being hurt, but also because, to be honest, like being in a gang was always frowned upon within my family, within the adults in my family. Like, yeah, sure, my older cousin was a Latin King and my older brother was a Latin, too, you know, obviously my second oldest brother was a Latin King. And then my brother Tim would end up being a Latin King in the same generation as me. But that doesn't mean that it was widely accepted. Nobody wanted that. Nobody embraced that, you know, especially like my dad was a man's man. He didn't like the gang idea. You know, my uncle, you know, so, you know, my family wasn't like they embraced the thought of gang life. So, yeah, I kept my life as far away from my actual family as I could. And you know, to this day, with the exception of maybe one of my cousins and somebody who I was really close with, you know, they could never tell you stories about my life. They're hearing them for the first time right now with everybody else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, I don't know if that's a credit or if that's a cop out, you know, but I did keep it away from my family. And, you know, so, yeah, to see, I guess it's a blessing. In a curse, it's a blessing in a sense. Obviously, it's a curse in a sense that it happened in the first place, but it's a blessing that it ultimately deterred these guys from continuing on the path that I was on. You know, Chico, listen, that was like one of my best friends, man. And I we don't have communication now, but he went on to do great things. He ended up, you know, from scratch, from nothing. From just a street guy like me, street fighting, he ended up making it to a UFC. You know, he was actually on UFC cards. And, you know, Pelon, to his credit, you know, he stayed away from the drama. He stayed away from the street. You know, he's a hardworking, you know, I believe he works for a masonry company, you know, he's got a family. And you know, so, you know, these are guys that they left when they should have. You know, obviously when it happened, everybody call them cowards, but the reality is they made the best decision.
Can you talk a little bit about, because to me, this lady was probably almost a mother to you. Would you agree with that?
For sure. No, for sure. And something a lot of people don't know, I mean, even my family doesn't know, is that for a while there, man, she was even willing to adopt me because, you know, underneath the exterior of being a Latin King and doing the stupid things that I was doing, I was actually like a decent kid. You know, I did well in school. I played sports, you know, like I was a decent kid. So, you know, she loved me, man. She called me like, you know, like I was one of her sons. Yeah, man, for sure. You know, and that's obviously, you know, me calling her mom is no slight to my mom. Like I love my mom with all my heart. Right. But it was more of a thing of respect for her. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, definitely, man. She definitely had, and still does, man. You know, unfortunately, you know, she passed away at this point, you know, from different causes, obviously not from that. And, you know, she lived a longer life, but, you know, I still love her. Like, you know, like yesterday, man, she took me in when I had nobody. She took care of me when I had nobody. She fed me, she clothed me. So definitely, man, she was definitely a big part of my life.
So when you reflect on it now, what do you think was the reason that her sons stepped away from this after this happened and you didn't? Do you just think there was nothing that was going to take you away from this life? Or did, after this happened, did you kind of push yourself away from her out of guilt, possibly, for what happened? Or how did that play out?
Well, you know, her sons were a little bit older than me. Chico was like my brother's age, so he's probably like 3 years older than me, you know, and he stayed in the gang for a while after this. It wasn't like he immediately started pushing himself away. It wasn't until I think he seen how serious the street life had gotten with guns and shootings and that he started to kind of bring himself out of it. Now, with the older one, with Belon, I think his motives, although his mom being shot played a role, I also think that he started seeing not just the violence, but he got into a weird situation where he was an older guy, older than Chico, and he didn't get respect like the younger guys, like myself or like my brother or like Toot or, you know, Benny or whoever it was. Well, not necessarily Benny because he was a little younger, but like Toot or my brother or myself, he wasn't getting that respect because he wasn't in the street. So for him to have to answer to guys like us was almost like a slap in the face. I mean, you know, you're supposed to be this gang member. He was a gang member before I was. But at the end of the day, you're not the one in the street, so nobody respects your word. So he never had a position at some point. You know, once he kind of got stripped of his initial position from when I became 19th Street, he never had a position again. And that put him in a weird position to where, a weird predicament, I guess is a better word, to where he almost had to answer to guys like me and answer to guys like my brother who came in after him, who were younger than him. And I think that kind of drove him away simultaneously with what was going on, with how violent things were getting, and then obviously what happened with his mom.
So it sounds like, in a way, they were both kind of probably on the trajectory of leaving already, and this was just another thing to stack onto the reasons of, I want to, of leaving the lifestyle. You know, it was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. You know,
I think for Belon especially, I think for Chico, not as much, but it definitely played a role at some point.
I mean, it had to have, because I mean, that always had, every time he stepped in to any sort of gang activity, he must have thought, God, is this going to get my mom shot again? I mean,
right. That's a good point, especially for somebody like him, because like I said, his mom was more in the public eye because she was such a give back to the community kind of woman. You know, she was in all these places. She didn't care if she was in 2-1 hood or LF hood or wherever she was at. She was coaching baseball. You know, she was coaching basketball. She's not thinking about that. You know, she's not thinking about the wrong guy walking in the food mart aisle or Walmart or wherever. She's just living as a woman, you know. So, yeah, I could definitely see, you know, in their eyes why it would be even more of something to think about. You know, to be fair. Yeah, looking at it like that, that's definitely a possibility, especially because, you know, rarely was I walking around with my mom or my dad or, you know, whomever it was. And so, yeah, it makes sense. You know, she was definitely more, I guess, at risk.
And I think this does a really great job of just demonstrating how everything you were doing, even though, like, let's take your situation, you were trying to separate your family from you because you wanted to keep them away from all of this. But all it took was one guy that had a grudge against you figuring out who your parents were. And there was a big bullseye on their back, regardless of how close you were to them or not, you know?
Right.
And that's a really scary thing.
Right. And it carries on down the line, man. I mean, you think about just, you know, thankfully, and this is this is a part that I think people should really understand about guys that live the gang life, guys that were in the street. This should be a testament to show that there is a lot of people, the majority of the guys that are involved do have hearts, do have consciences, do, you know, they do feel what you feel. They're not these evil people, because, you know, it takes a very few percentage of guys to hold on to a grudge for so long to where, and to, for it to be so deep to where they're willing to hurt your family behind it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the moment, that's one thing, right? In the moment, if somebody's mom gets killed, their sister gets killed, in the moment, yeah, revenge is at the top of everybody's list, and whoever gets hurt gets hurt. But over time, man, this is a testament to how men grow and quote unquote gang members grow. Guys aren't holding on to that, man. They're just not, you know, and these are guys that have been shot at. I've been shot at, you know, I'm not, you know, obviously I'm in a different place now, but even if I was in the street, I'm not hunting down every guy that ever shot at me, man. Mm-hmm. And going to hurt his mom and his kids. And like, no, man, like, you know, that's not reality. Now, like I said, and like we said before, yeah, there's always them evil people that have it in their heart that's just who they are, and they're willing to do anything to hurt anybody. But that is the exception, not the rule, man. For the most part, man, guys, you know, they get into these gangs, man, at a young age. It's about camaraderie, you know, it's about finding a family and being accepted. And yeah, you get caught up into some bad things and you end up doing bad things and people pay the ultimate price. But it's not like these guys are, you know, extreme serial killers that are stalking prey.
Right.
It's not like that.
I have to say, I think that was probably the most intense story that we've told on this podcast to date. So
yeah, it definitely it hit home for me. It hits home all the time when I think about it.
And I kind of want to bring it back to, because I just want to clarify, because you said the whole thing about the gang that was it a cousin was dating one of the gang members, and you're thinking that these are the people that came and shot up the house. So they never actually found out who shot up this house at this point.
To my knowledge, nobody was ever charged or
anything.
So
basically everything you're saying is just an assumption. Like, you're not even sure if it was that gang that shot up the house.
Right, right. No, 100%. That, you know, the reason why we came to that theory is because of how we carried ourselves around that house. You know, meaning that we were never outside in front with our hats broke off, banging Latin King. Very rarely would anybody outside the gang know that we were there, with the exception of her letting this guy know. That's what made us and led us to believe that it was that gang. It was that group. Right. And we could be completely wrong. You know, there could have been somebody watching from down the alley and seeing a couple of guys stumble into the house, you know, drunk one night. Who knows? So, right. Yeah, you know, and to be fair, that's completely a possibility. I'm just going by theoretically what we think might have happened. And, you know, there was, you know, what's crazy is there was actually another moment in this house, right? In this house, right after this happened, where things are packed up, everybody's getting ready to move out. There's still like furniture there. She was actually still living there. The mom was still actually living there. We were obviously still living there. And now at this time, with the fact that nobody from the family was usually there, there was a little bit more of that hanging out, kind of a little bit like hanging out in front, maybe, you know, sitting on the porch a little bit, you know, not much, but just enough to where it got noticed. And there ended up being a situation where it was actually, this was actually Pelon's beef. Pelon got into it with a couple of guys. They were GDs or they were some rival. They actually came and shot the house up from the front of the house. Now, and you want to hear something really scary, right? So they shot up the house, man. And these were like 44 bullets. I'm talking about, these were like big, big slugs. And Chico's nephew was actually sleeping on the couch, right? These bullets are flying. They're flying through the front of the house, right? One of the bullets came through. Now, thankfully, the front of the house is brick. It's actually brick wall. Mm-hmm. Old style duplex. It's actually brick. So one of the bullets actually came through the front of the house, through the brick, came through the couch, and was stuck in the pillow right where Chico's nephew was laying, and it burned his back. It didn't go through. It literally stopped in the pillow. That's how close it came. And this kid's like, I want to say he was like 7 years old, 8 years old, that close, you know, that close. He would have been gone. There's no way he would have survived. I mean, that slug, it was a slug. It was a 45 slug, basically. Like, if it wasn't for that brick wall that it went through and penetrated, you know, going through the couch and the pillow was nothing. It's like, you know, butter, right? But the fact that brick slowed it down and it died, like it literally died in the pillow and was burning his back.
Oh my
like
God.
It's a crazy story, man. And that's why I say, man, like, you know, these instances, I'm sure everybody's had them, you know, and I'm talking about in any other gang, you know, I don't care where you're from, 2-1, Cobra, LF, MP, you know, whatever you are, I'm sure you have some story that's similar that, you know, you could probably share, man, if they ever called in and wanted to share about a time where they had something like this happen. You know, it's really common. You know, it's just, you know, you don't see these stories on the news because thankfully, thank God, you know, nobody died.
Yeah.
But it's so common. It's so common. It's like, you know.
I don't know what to say to that one, man. That's a real thing. That's almost as intense as the previous story.
Yeah.
So are you assuming that was this same rival gang, or do you think because you guys were more hanging out in front of the house now?
Those were different ones. Those were different ones. Those ones we were almost certain were these GDs that it was almost like a personal beef that Pelon had with these guys because he knew the guys who he was at war with at that time. Like it was a personal thing. They knew each other from a long time ago. And so, yeah, that was different.
Wow. Well, it was a good thing that you moved out of that house then, because it sounds like a terrible place to be living.
Yeah, it would only got worse.
All right. Well, do you have another story you want to throw out there with an example of this, or should we?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I actually got two I can give you really quick, right?
Okay.
And one hits more at home for me, and another one is just an example of just pure unluck, right? So I'll give you the unlucky one first, and I'll go over it really fast because I can tell we've been running a little long.
Yeah.
So it was this guy, Gucci, right? We're at Gucci's house, right? And Gucci had just got on in a bracelet, so that's why we were over there. We wouldn't typically be over there because, you know, his parents weren't the type to have guys over there, Latin Kings hanging out. But they knew who Gucci was. They knew what kind of friends he had, and he had just got on a bracelet. They wanted him to stay out of trouble and not cut the bracelet off to come hang out with us. So they were okay with us coming over there. So gotcha. One night, we're over there, we're partying, and there's a lot of us. And when I mean there's a lot of us, I mean there's probably like 15 of us, right? Which is not terribly a lot, but for us, it was like a whole bunch of us. And I was in front with this guy Snuff and with Mondi. That name sounds familiar because he's always going to be in my stories. and so we were actually in the front of his house. He lived on a busy street. And the rest of the guys were like towards the back by his garage, like some were playing basketball, just drinking, hanging out. He happened to live right across the street from a hall, right? And so a guy comes out. He's got two girls with him. And Snuff was a clown. So Snuff's like trying to talk to the girls, right? He's like, yo, he's trying to talk to him. The guy looks back. And, you know, he's kind of like looking at us like intensely. So we throw up our hands to him like, what? Like, what are you looking at? You know what I mean? He storms back in the hall. And then shortly after that, he comes out with like 2-3 guys. And he's like pointing at us because we're still standing in front of Gucci's house. And they go back inside. No big deal, right? Hours go by. The hall closes. Now, when the hall closes, it just so happened. I mean, I was like in the back, right? And then I hear like some commotion. Guys are like, yo, those dudes are in front again. We end up finding out that hall is full of MPs, right? We didn't know that, right? So, I mean, it wouldn't have changed much, but we didn't know it. So I walked to the front. And when I walked to the front, I mean, listen, man, this is a hall. It was a party. There was probably like, no exaggeration, probably like 65, maybe 70 MPs there, right? And then they had all their women with them, right? Like, you know, these are the women that, like I said, there are some women that only stay within the clique that they're hanging out with. These were those kind of women because we could tell, right? And so we're looking now. We're not scared, right? Because if it's going to come down to a fight, like, okay, whatever. Like, we fight. If we lose, like, whatever. Like, no problem, right? So, but we are outnumbered a lot. Probably 3-1, right? Maybe 4-1. I don't know. They were close together. So, well, we start doing, we start evening up the odds, right? So I grabbed like a, there was like a big log that looked like a baseball bat kind of, cause he had like a fireplace. So it was like them kind of logs. Guys had baseball bats. So guys were grabbing things up, right? It literally looked like a Wild Wild West fight, man. Like they, cause it's two in the morning now, right? So there's no traffic. They're coming across this busy street and they're like marching in step. It's crazy. Like I can picture in my head, like they're marching in step towards us. And we're all next to each other now. We're ready to go, right? We're all there too. We're like, okay, whatever, let's go. So I got this log in my hand. I'm ready to take one of their heads off, right? Like, let's do it. And as soon as they get to the middle of the street, Snuff throws his beer in the middle of the crowd. You know, it splatters everywhere, right? And then that like made everybody stop. The whole crowd stopped in unison, and one little guy comes marching forward and starts shooting at us. So guys are like running, you know what I'm saying? Like we're scattering, boom, boom, we're taking off. Everybody, you know, Gucci had like a field behind his house. It was like a field that, you know, you could run and then you would pop up on some other street. It's hard to explain, but that's how it felt, right? Mm-hmm. So it was a big, huge field. So everybody, we're scrambling. No, we didn't have a gun on us, right? This story actually, I just explained to Gavin, this story actually led into another story about why we carry guns on us from here on out, because my thought was not to bring the guns to this place because Gucci lived in a nicer neighborhood. It backfired on us. So anyways, they shooting at us. Boom. I end up finding out because everybody took off. I end up finding out later on in the night, the only person that got shot out of all the kings that were there was Gucci's brother, and he wasn't a king.
Oh my God.
The only person he got shot in the foot, right? So it wasn't devastating, but he got shot in the foot. But it was just the irony in that, right? Like he was coming out to help us, coming to fight with us. You know what I mean? But you know, the only one who got shot was his brother. Like, I mean, what are the odds of that, right? Like these are clear signs that you look back now and they're like, yo, they're telling you, hey, listen, these people are getting hurt. They got nothing to do with anything. And look, so that's that story. And I'm going to speed through that one and I'm going to go right to the next one. If you got questions, then you can tell me at the end.
Okay.
Right? So the next story involves really, really close to home. This one is a heartbreaker to me, right? Nobody gets hurt. So I'll caveat with that. But it just, the thought of it, it still gives me a sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach. I was with my brother, who's not a king, my brother Joe. But he, you know, he loves us. He always around us. And he's been around gang members, but never been in a gang. Been around kings, been around, you know, never been in a gang. And I remember we were on A Street by Desmond's house. And Desmond lived on a one-way. So, I mean, not a one-way, a dead end, right? So he lived right by the creek. That means that nobody ever came down that street that wasn't with us because they knew they weren't going to make it out of there. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, obviously we had guns there like all the time. We were always outside. It was like an era where we were always by Desmond's house. And so I remember sitting out in front and my brother was like selling pit bulls or like trying to sell a pit bull. I don't know. I remember the gist of that story, but he was there and he had just walked over, cause one of his friends lived on 9th Street and he just walked over there to see me and my brother, Tim, you know, just to see what was going on with us and see if anybody wanted to buy a pit bull. So he was just there harmless, nothing, you know, just coming to hang out. And I've seen a car, man, coming down Cleveland and then like turn in on A Street by us, right? And then when they seen us standing out there, they reversed out and kept going. So I'm like, all right, that's a little sketchy, right? But, you know, whatever, didn't pay no attention to it. And we had just got them playing basketball. So I got like basketball shorts on. I got a basketball in my hand, literally. And then Joe's like, hey, you want to walk with me over here to drop this dog off right over on 9th Street? So I'm like, all right, yeah, no problem. Now, I always had a gun on me, right? But it was literally right across the creek, a block away, maybe 2 blocks away. And so I didn't even think about to grab the gun. It's got them playing basketball. I'm like sweaty. I'm like, all right, come on, let's go. And then we're going to come right back. So we crossed the creek, the little bridge. And then I see the car that I had just seen, right? And it's turning towards us, but then it turns right away left into the alley. And so I didn't think nothing of it. I'm like, all right, well, whatever. Like, all right, no big deal. They turn it out. And So we keep walking, and when we got to that alley, man, them dudes were literally standing right there with a gun pointing at us and start shooting. God. Boom, boom, boom. And I push my brother Joe. I'm like, go, go, you know, run. And I push him, you know, and he runs, he takes off. And then I, you know, I'm running behind him. And, you know, thankfully, you know, thank God he wasn't hit. I wasn't hit. Nobody was hit. But it's just the thought of that that makes me sick. Like, my brother has nothing to do with anything, man. He doesn't gangbang. He's never hurt nobody. You know, he's just Joe, man. He's a Southside guy. People love him, man. You know, at the time, like, everybody loved my brother. He was, you know, innocent. But just goes to show, man, you know, some people don't care about that. And then not only that, is they don't necessarily know that Joe isn't a gangbanger, you know, because it's not like everybody knows everybody individually. You know what I mean? It's like, right. You know, it's gang on gang violence. But I mean, yeah, so that's what I got, man. And I'm sure there's probably more stories I could drum up about this kind of incident where it just happens. And innocent people that are family members or friends, they get hurt that have nothing to do with the nonsense that we were involved in.
So what was Joe's response after this happened? Was this just kind of one of those things that he knew could happen and was just like, shook it off, nothing happened, okay, good? Or, I mean, was he like, dude, what the hell?
No, he was scared. I remember him being scared and being like, man, that's what, you know, like, that's what happens? Like, that's what you're going through? Like, kind of thing. And I kind of explained to him, like, well, yeah, but it's usually us on the other side of it, you know? And, he's like, man, you got to be careful. You know, it's my older brother. You got to remember, I'm the youngest of five boys. So, you know, he's worried about me as his brother. You know what I mean? And that was kind of the conversation. I mean, he was in. It wasn't like, you know, everybody knew, man. You know, nobody was going to tell me what to do. You know, at that point in my life, nobody was going to tell me what to do. But, you know, just I heeded his warning. But at the same time, like, you know, it was another day at the office. Like, you know, they won that battle, so to speak. But yeah, so that was kind of the conversation.
That's crazy. So, well, that was some heated stories, man. Like, yeah. You went heavy. You went, you know, we've been on a, for the listeners don't realize this, but we've been on a 2-week break because I've been on vacation. And you just brought out all the stops for this episode back, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I got to get our viewership up, man. Make sure people see what really is going on.
So cool. All right. Well, do you have anything else, or should we wrap this one up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up, man. I got to save some for the run.
All right. Well, we thank everybody for tuning in. And as always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on your favorite podcast player. As well, you can reach out to us at normalizedcrime@gmail.com. And do you have a topic in mind for the next episode, Berto, or should we just leave it up in the air? Leave them in suspense.
Our next episode, man, we're going to talk about, you know, hustling in prison, making money in prison.
Hustling in prison is up next. So we will be back in 1 week with that episode. And we thanks again for everybody for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Normalized Crime. Stay tuned for the next episode.